Hello and welcome to the podcast. I am your host, David Rothkopf, joined as ever by your other hosts, Chris Cotmore and Riley Fessler. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
What are you following in the world today, Chris?
I'm starting with Ukraine. So first, the Kremlin is reportedly replacing its top naval commander amidst some successful Ukrainian attacks on the Russian Black Sea fleet. And it's caused significant losses. I'm not sure, you know, what releasing their top naval commander is going to do. Also, I would expect, as many of these folks do, we'll not see him for quite some time, maybe if ever again. But on top of that, the U.S. Is sending $300 million of aid to Ukraine, which I was surprised about because, of course, we've been reporting for weeks that this has been held up in Congress. But apparently there has been some savings from the Pentagon's budget that is allowing the United States to send support in the form of weapons and aid. I don't know exactly how that works, David. I guess that does not require congressional approval, but it's positive news being reported from Reuters this morning.
Yeah, I hope the news does not like send a message to members of Congress that they don't need to do anything on Ukraine. Like, oh yeah, well, you got plenty of other money. The notion, of course, that the Defense Department actually has some extra cash lying around, you know, doesn't strike me as gigantically surprising on the $800 billion that they get every year. You know, I'm glad they've been a little creative on this. $300 million is not $40 billion, which is what has been requested. It did include some ATACM long-range missiles, which is certainly, you know, a good thing. You know, it's a little bit out. Having said that, every single day, the House could pass the bill that was passed in the Senate and release the money. They don't. It's a choice. Donald Trump, Mike Johnson have made a choice. Let's not fund Ukraine. Let's make Russian success more likely. Let's ensure that more Ukrainians suffer and die. It's appalling, and this is a bit of a Band-Aid. Riley?
So we've talked on this show and our others about the kind of threat of AI for the many elections taking place this year.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, by the way, I'm ready to have AI handle this podcast. You know what I'm saying? We could get some AI bots each morning.
They wouldn't
have our chemistry, would they?
No, not quite.
Yeah, I was talking to a loyal listener yesterday, and she said, "You know, your new show, you know, your daily show has evolved. It's now the DSR Morning Zoo." And I was like,
"Wow,
okay, harsh
words."
Well, I think she meant it as a compliment, but you know, like, there's a little bit of banter and liveliness going on here. For those of you who like banter, we're delighted. For those of you who don't like banter, I apologize. Go on, Riley. Sorry.
So the Indian government has kind of shifted on their previous stance, which was kind of more of a non-interventionist stance on AI in terms of making policy. But they have now issued an advisory directing tech companies to obtain explicit approval before releasing any, quote, unreliable or under-tested generative AI models and tools, which has led to kind of quite a stir in the country, especially among the tech community, worrying that this could stifle innovation and arguing that it could hinder the growth of the industry in India. However, they've already offered exemptions for startups from seeking prior permissions and are attempting to balance kind of regulatory oversight with innovation. But I think it's an interesting kind of balancing act that I think all countries are going to have to make in terms of, you know, trying to regulate this kind of fast-growing industry that regulators might not fully understand. So I'm curious how this is going to work.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, is it like, as soon as I read the story, I thought, oh, they're planning to use AI to steal their elections. You know what I mean? In other words, there's some governments that see AI as a way to be Big Brother. They see it as a way to promote disinformation. They don't want to regulate it, at least as far as their own use of it goes. We're in the early days yet, and most people don't really have a big grip of what's going on, and people use the term AI kind of loosely. All I can say is this is going to be an issue, you know, for, I don't know, I was about to say the next decade. I really mean the next several centuries. Chris?
The UN is reporting that a quarter of Gaza's population is on the brink of famine, with Joseph Borrell, the EU's foreign policy chief, attributing the crisis to deliberate restrictions on aid, labeling it a man-made disaster. I've actually been pretty struck by interviews that I've heard over the past week or so, where, you know, there's really not a lot of sympathy from the Israeli population in terms of what's going on in Gaza. And I know I'm generalizing and I apologize for that, but I literally heard people say that these people are not starving. It's essentially propaganda. And that obviously we should continue with the assault on Gaza, which I am completely 100% against at this point. Yes, as Biden pointed out in his State of the Union, Israel has the right to defend themselves, but they do not have the right to essentially wipe a country off the face of the earth. And every time we hear these, you know, reports, I just can't help but think about the people in Gaza who are suffering over this assault.
Well, you know, there's a good column by Tom Friedman, who actually went to the border of Gaza last week with the U.S. general, who's the commander of CENTCOM and is the one who's responsible for getting aid supplies in. And he stood at the border and he saw this. He talked to some IDF officials, and I encourage you to read the column. But essentially, you know, he said, you know, this is the work of Netanyahu and Hamas. Both of them need to go. But he made another point, which is salient to your point, which is this is not just about the destruction of Gaza. This is about the fact that Israel has no plan for what happens next. And that, you know, they could turn Gaza, if they keep out any kind of credible Palestinian government, into a kind of Somalia, into a permanent humanitarian crisis. And their resistance to the idea of self-governing Palestinian state is the obstacle to the rebuilding. And you know, that's gonna be right up on our front bumpers real soon. It's gonna come at us real fast. Whether it's from a ceasefire now or it's one in a couple of months, Gaza's gone. It'd take tens of billions, hundreds of billions to rebuild it. There's no government. Somebody's got to agree on who the government is. There's no aid mechanisms. There's no economy. And there are 2 million people. So I share your views, Chris, but I also think we should keep an eye on the next phase, the rebuilding, the day after. And recognize that the Israeli reluctance to propose anything credible in that regard and their commitment to blocking what's necessary there is as bad as their destruction and the deaths. Riley?
So a new report from the International Energy Agency has shown that methane emissions from the energy sector persisted near record highs last year, despite oil and gas industry's pledges to address leaking infrastructure. The report highlights that the emissions, which are chiefly from fossil fuel operations, remained unacceptably high. at over 120 million metric tons of methane released in the atmosphere, which is actually a slight increase from the previous year. The report kind of alleges that the gap here is between what countries say they're emitting and the reality, as well as these leaks. But they are actually hopeful, given that there are new methane-detecting satellites that are being launched, which should enable greater detail and wider coverage in tracking these emissions, as well as kind of these areas of leaks, to be able to more accurately hold countries accountable for leaks in their infrastructure and any potential kind of difference between what they're reporting and what the actual emissions are. So it's a grim report, but the future actually could be brighter given this new technology.
If you're tired of hearing ads, you can support the show by becoming a member. This week, listeners of the DSR Network shows can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, and early access to select podcasts. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DSRNetwork, one word, to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DSRNetwork. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, March 16th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
A really important story. Couldn't be more important. Obviously, when a lot of us think of methane emissions, we think of cattle, which are big sort of source of methane emissions, by the way. Chris, you're saying you don't, but you should.
No, I know they emit a lot of emissions.
No, it's methane.
But I don't think about cows.
No.
My first thought is not cows.
Cow farts are a threat to humanity. And you shouldn't eat much beef. Beef uses up more, is a greater threat to the environment than almost anything else. Your fleet of Hummers, for example, it's worse than that. But having said that, I think one of the breakthroughs that's going to come over the course of the next several years is our ability to identify, manage, track emissions much greater accuracy worldwide. And I think, by the way, going back to our earlier story, AI is going to be of some assistance in that regard. Chris?
Oh, don't worry. Congress will vote to ban cows in the near future, I predict.
You sound like a Republican now.
And before people start accusing me of being a Rand Paul supporter, I will explain. But the U.S. House of Representatives is poised to vote on a bill which is expected to pass. It targets TikTok, the social media platform owned by ByteDance, which is, of course, based in China. The CEO, it's been about a year. I think his last appearance was March 24th. So, you know, you got to get the guy back up on Capitol Hill to, fight for his company's life. Congressional, representatives have received, hundreds, thousands of phone calls from people who, have indicated that their livelihoods are at stake and, you know, they obviously do not want their, elected, officials to vote for this bill, but it is going to pass. It faces a bit more, or a much more uphill battle in the Senate. President Biden has said he will sign the bill if it lands on his desk. Here's why I feel the way I feel. Yes, I don't agree with.
You're the head of the Charlie D'Amelio fan club. Is that the?
No. No, and I'm not like a particularly heavy user of TikTok. But there has not been any evidence. And I get the threat. I'm not naive, everyone. I get the threat exists. But there's no evidence that data has made its way to Chinese officials, that the platform is influencing communist thinking in any sort of way. I think it's an overstep, frankly. I think it's like a lot of other things. People react without necessarily knowing all the facts. I don't have a problem with them dragging Mr. ByteDance up on Capitol Hill and questioning them about their privacy practices. There are lots of companies, Apple, Google, who control the app stores, who, yes, I have a little bit of faith that their policies are, geared toward the privacy of their consumers.
Oh, come on. Come on. You don't. You know they're stealing it. You know that the solution here is simple. It's a kind of European solution. It is against the law. You just write a law. It's one sentence long. It is against the law for any web platform provider or user to appropriate the information of any other user without their explicit permission. Period. And then if you get any evidence that that's happening, you fine them a couple times and then you shut them down. But that should be Google. It should be ByteDance. It should be Deep State Radio. If we ever did that, we don't, folks. Your info is safe with us. We have three systems in the world. There's the European system where you have to opt in. You have to consciously choose, as I just described, that you're going to give up your some info. There's the U.S. system where you have to opt out. You have to say to Google, please don't take my info. And then there's the Chinese system, which is the government owns everything anyway, and it will continue and it will own and control this. Though that's an oversimplification. But we all need to move towards the European system, which is a lot more sensible.
Well, let me just say two more things. One, if you haven't seen, I think it's called Super Pumped. I watched it again for some reason over the weekend. It's the story of Travis Kalanick and Uber. Watch what they freaking did with their phones in cars.
I know, it was bad.
It was insane. They were recording.
Those are bad guys.
They were recording video. And the second thing I'll say, which I hope doesn't
that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he was a bad guy.
He was a fine guy. It's Travis Kalanick.
Oh, Travis Kalanick. I always get them confused. Yeah.
That was the bad guy. Yeah. But how many text messages do I get every single day from the Democrats who I've never given my information to because I live in a database of people who have donated or have indicated interest in the party, and they feel it's okay that they text me every fucking day.
You know what's the worst trend? And we've got to wrap it up here in a second. But you know what the worst trend is? I'm getting text messages that say, like I'm oversimplifying. If you don't do this, you're a loser. They're like developing this attitude, this is your last chance to do the right thing, shithead. And it's like, you think that's gonna work with me, stranger? But somehow somebody did some calculation that, abusing people while you're, appropriating their information and asking them for money works. Maybe we should try that, Chris, as our ad campaign. If you don't subscribe to DSR, we will think less of you. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be that harsh. Just be, we will not admire you. Well, anyway, think about that. Riley has an even stupider story. No, this is not a story. Riley's story, however, takes the cake for the day as the dumbest story possibly of the week, possibly of the year.
That's why I had to pick it, because it was just too stupid. My jaw literally dropped when I saw the headline. We have some indication of the intellectual titans that RFK Jr. is courting as his vice presidential candidate. And we know that it is American football quarterback Aaron Rodgers or former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. He's really just finding the best and brightest for this.
No. He's like running on the CTE ticket, or the you know the externally induced brain damage ticket, because RFK Jr. was, of course, a heroin addict at one point. That can't be good for your brain. And it proves it's not good for your brain by taking a guy who's a former professional wrestler and another one who is the looniest loony in the NFL and saying, oh yeah, those guys, that would be, let's have them be one heartbeat away from the presidency. I mean, unbelievable. And Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but if Aaron Rodgers becomes his running mate, like, certainly Chicago Bears fans are not voting for RFK Jr. So he loses Illinois. Probably Dallas Cowboy fans are not voting for a ticket with a former Green Bay Packer on it. New York Giants fans are not voting for a ticket that's got a New York Jet on it. Has anybody done the math on this?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, thank
you. It's a good point.
That's the kind of political analysis. People come to the DSR Daily. You think if you go and you listen to Ian Bremmer's thing at G0 Media, they're going to talk about this? No, they're not. You go to the New York Times Daily. You think they're going to talk about this? No, they're not. I bet our friend Greg Sargent at the Daily Blast over at TNR, I bet his show today, Riley, is not about Aaron Rodgers, is it?
No, it is not.
No, it is not. But we tackle these issues. Why? I'll tell you why. And I'm going to leave you with this. Because as insane as it is to think that RFK Jr., a former heroin addict who knows nothing about anything, running with an NFL player who's an anti-vaxxer and a lunatic, could run for president, they could actually tip the scales in this election and make Donald Trump the next president of the United States. Because there are 8% of Americans, or 11 or 6, who are going to vote for these idiots because they think it's funny, or they think it's a change of pace, or because they're idiots themselves. So while we laugh at all of this, RFK Jr. doesn't expect to become president. What he does expect is to be relevant in the election cycle. And the way to do that is to trigger everybody who's a possible marginal voter into picking them for some, reason. And it won't be a good reason. It'll be a bad reason. And so that's the logic. And the amount of press this story has gotten shows that it is justified to some extent. Anyway, Riley, you are officially our RFK Jr. vice presidential correspondent for the remainder of this campaign. And we expect
that's
you
quite
to,
a promotion.
Yeah, we expect you to stay on those stories. We know that Chris is going to be following TikTok extremely closely. So he's not going to have time for this. And I personally am going to devote myself to the Kate Middleton Photoshop scandal, which is the biggest story in the United Kingdom. And I condemn both of you for not having covered it more thoroughly.
We didn't cover Scarlett Johansson's fantastic
performance as Katie Britt.
I'm not performing.
It was good. My wife was like, why do they always have Scarlett Johansson on? And I was like, well, she's married to Colin Jost. He's like the head writer. Anyway, she was good. It was good. The green shirt did all the acting. Just made, told the whole story. Go watch that if you have time. And we'll be back with more. Today's Wednesday. Today's the day of the mothership. And we have a special guest on the mothership today, former MSNBC anchor and brilliant commentator, Mehdi Hasan, is joining their podcast to talk about his new media venture and the rest of the world. So this is something you won't want to miss. And we look forward to having you join us then. Until then, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Riley. Thanks, Aaron Rodgers. Thanks, Jesse Ventura. Thanks, everybody out there in ByteDance world. We enjoy having you with us, and we'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.